Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. This week we speak with Anthony Cabot, a professor at the UNLV Boyd School of Law, on the legal ramifications of the lockdown ordered by the governor of Nevada. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino, sportsbook, or poker room can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Take a load off, Betty. And you put the load right on me. The coronavirus pandemic has certainly been unprecedented in many ways, socially, economically, and legally. Tony Cabot is one of the deans of the gaming law field, having been active through many various developments in the discipline down through the years. Now, as a distinguished fellow of gaming law at the Boyd Law School at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Cabot is thinking about how the casinos will reopen, what are and should be the stipulations, what is the role of the regulator, and what will be the long-term impact of the pandemic. He spoke with me over the phone from his home in Las Vegas last week. Tony Cabot, thanks for joining us on a special edition of the GGB Podcast. Good to talk to you, although I'd prefer it in person, but these are the times we live in, I suppose.
You're absolutely right.
So let's start with the situation in Nevada. Obviously, it's totally unprecedented. The Nevada industry is suffering its first closure in almost 100 years of gaming. How do you think the industry is going to rebound from this?
Well, I think it's going to be a slow rebound. You know, I think there really are three different things that have to come together in the absence of a vaccine. I think the first is that people have to be comfortable with traveling again, right? I mean, we're going to go from 45 million or so visitors coming through the airport to a situation where today I can look up the sky from my backyard and not see a single airplane.
Right.
So I think that has to be the first thing. People just have to get back into accepting social activities as a way of life. The second concerns me a bit as well, and that is how will people see post-virus Vegas? You know, we have substantially changed our economics over the past 25 or 30 years since I've been here. And when I first got here, we were two-thirds or greater gambling and one-third everything else, entertainment,
right,
restaurants, et cetera. That's completely flipped. Gambling plays a far less important role in the attractiveness of the city. And, if we open with gambling, without nightclubs, without restaurants, or limited restaurants, without entertainment, will it be the same, will have the same level of attractiveness to the customers? The third is more up my alley, and that becomes is what does the government and what does the casinos do to convince people that, they should come back to Las Vegas. And it's those efforts that I think really need to be focused on between now and whenever the opening is. I'm far less concerned about what the date of the opening is,
mm-hmm,
than what we do when we open, because I think that will have a much greater impact on the next 12 months in the history of Vegas.
Sure, no question. So what role should the regulators play in the reopenings?
Well, here's my concern. I'm seeing that a number of casinos, you see the Wynn, you see the Venetian stations and some other casinos, are really doing a really nice job of coalescing around what are best practices for the reopening in terms of protecting the health and safety of the workers and the patrons.
Right.
But people forget that We have 290 casinos in Nevada.
Right.
And so, you know, what the leaders do won't necessarily be followed by the rest of the industry. So I really think that we need to have at least some minimum standards imposed upon reopening regarding the health and safety of the workers and the guest.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think that we have 2 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever the case may be, to put these into place. And, you know, my feeling is that, you know, while this is a health emergency, it doesn't necessarily mean that that should not be something that they get comment from a variety of sources. You know, I'm sure that the state is talking to the major casino owners, but, you know, they should be talking to the small casino owners. They should be talking to the public. They should be talking to the workers.
Sure.
And so I was, you know, I would have hoped that they would have some online open meetings or some type of notice and comment as to what they're thinking with regard to this, and let people, you know, give their opinions as to the effectiveness of these things, of these different measures, the cost, the ease of implementation, practicality, and other things.
Sure.
But I think that they should come up ultimately with the minimum standards that everybody needs to follow.
Sure, and you're talking about social distancing, maybe three players at a table, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I'm not looking at something long-term just for the
sure.
length of this crisis, but there's so many great ideas out there. You know, every day I go online and I'm looking at the different ideas they have for distancing between the slot machines, the use of disinfectants, all these various different measures. So, you know, I think that there's a tremendous number of great ideas out there. We just have to figure out what should be the minimum standard.
Sure, absolutely. So how about the thoughts of how the casinos will reopen? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, obviously people aren't going to be comfortable really traveling to Las Vegas, you know, in the next month or so. But how about opening up the locals' casinos and using them as kind of a test market for social distancing, for the actual return of the visitor to Las Vegas?
Well, yeah, I think the market will take care of that. And I think what you suggest is exactly what's going to happen, right? Is that the local casinos, because they have a customer base that doesn't need to travel, are going to have the greatest success on the reopening. But it still brings into play the fact that, okay, when we do that, we should have best practices put into place. Because if that doesn't go well, then how does it impact not only the local casinos, but also the entire state that wishes to reopen to non-local?
Sure, absolutely.
Customers, you know, and so I think that's really important that occur, and that when that does occur, that all the local casinos are implementing necessary health and safety precautions.
Sure. I was on a webinar this morning with Ray Pinot, the president of the Mohegan Casinos, and specifically he was talking about Mohegan Sun, and he was suggesting maybe they might go with an invitation-only opening where they invite their special clients to show up and, you know, to show them how clean it is, and they keep everybody else out for a while. Is that a possible scenario for Las Vegas Strip casinos?
Well, I think it's possible. You know, you know, it kind of brings up a different point, and that is that, you know, we do have a set of regulations that have been, you know, governing this industry for a long time. And one of those is that gaming be open to the public.
Sure.
Right? In Nevada.
Right.
So, you know, if we were looking at modifying any of those things, we have to look at that regulation.
Right.
That law. But we also have to take a look at, I think, all regulations in general. Right?
Sure.
I don't think, for example, that cash has a long future in the casino industry.
Right.
What we got to be looking at right now is, do we need to change our regulations on an expedited basis to accommodate the post-virus reality in Nevada?
Sure, absolutely.
Open it up for cashless systems. Chips also bother me as well.
Sure.
So many people touch chips. You know, is there a way to go chipless, or is there implementation with regard to the disinfectant and the chips in the racks? But we have to look at all the regulations and say, what do we need to change now so that we can be prepared for the post-virus reality?
Sure. So you're suggesting that there'll be a lot of technology changes that might require some changes in the regulatory process.
Yeah, for certain, right? I mean, we've sort of resisted to going to an all cashless system,
right,
for a long time. We really have to revisit that, and frankly, I think that the state should be soliciting ideas from just about anybody, entrepreneurs, the industry, saying, what do we need to change now to make your transition easier and safer for workers and patrons?
Right. And to make the patrons more comfortable to visit. That
absolutely.
That you've kind of taken care of some of their concerns, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that the cashless operations have been on the front of people's minds for quite some time, but again, the last hurdle over the regulators has always been a little tough. You think there are ways, though, that we could get them over that hurdle because of this situation?
Well, I think we have to, and that's just one example. But the future of cash, particularly after this crisis, on a societal basis, is I think limited.
Yeah, sure.
And we have to, A, understand that, and B, also realize that the taking cash out of the casinos in this particular environment is really a pretty good health and safety idea.
Right. iGamingPlayer.com was one of the first fully licensed affiliates in the New Jersey market. Through partnerships with all the major online casino, poker, and sports betting websites, iGamingPlayer has become one of the most trusted places where players visit before deciding where to gamble online. iGamingPlayer offers reviews of the online gaming sites, advice about how to play the games, odds and opinions on sports betting, and much more. Soon to be licensed in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Michigan, iGamingPlayer.com can make the difference between success and failure for new online casino, poker, or sports betting websites. For information on how to work with iGamingPlayer, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Now back to our podcast. So what kinds of liability would a casino be under when they reopen? I mean, if somebody tests positive after being at a casino, can they really prove that that's where they were infected? And would a casino be liable in that case?
Well, I think that's going to be an interesting question. I don't think it's going to be a strict liability sort of scenario that, wherever you get infected, whoever owns that business or premises is automatically liable. I think that we'll still look at it from the perspective of negligence, right?
Right.
And, so we have to start defining what duty the casino has to the customer.
Sure.
And whether the casinos have met that duty, right? So it's out there, but it's always been out there for everything. It didn't have to be this particular virus. It could be any type of virus or infection.
Sure.
It could be slip and falls. It could be all sorts of things. I just think that we have to, I think the liability issue is always going to be there. The casinos are smart. They know how to get the necessary insurance coverage to cover those types of liabilities. I think the broader thing is the casinos have to not only put these into place to protect the workers and the patrons, But they need to be out there convincing the workers and the patrons that it's now safe to return, and that, sure, that has to be the number one focus.
Okay. So when do you think, you know, the live events, the sports, the concerts, the meetings, how long before they come back?
Again, I'm not really sure how they come back. You know, until we have a vaccine, you know, I'm a great fan of live music.
Right.
But I'm not sure I'm booking any concerts anytime soon.
Sure.
And you know, I just think that people have to get comfortable, and it's going to take quite a while without a vaccine to say, you know, I'm not assuming an unreasonable risk to my health and my family's health by going out and going to concerts or going to sporting events.
Right.
You know, I just don't know when that's going to happen. You know, as long as we turn on the news every night and we're seeing more cases and 2,000 deaths nationwide, that's a real tough sell.
Sure, absolutely. And it's a tough time now for Vegas with the new stadium just opening. I mean, we already lost the draft last week, and now, you know, who knows if they're even going to have the people at football games in the fall. Who knows, you know? So it's a difficult situation.
Well, that, and look at that. I mean, you know, how many conventions come in here?
How many
companies are going to be scheduling anytime soon company retreats and company conventions to Las Vegas? You know, I think that, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, we're only one-third a gambling town anymore.
Right. Right. So there's been a couple of instances now here in Nevada that have changed due to this. And one of this was the ability to wager on an extended string of events for esports. One of the esports leagues is now open for wagering. Is that something you think is going to continue? And do you give credit to this situation for that happening?
Yeah, I believe that there's a future for wagering on esports, and this is you know, there's just a few handful of industries that can really take advantage of this crisis, and they're one of them.
Right.
I think that I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I think there's some concerns that I have with esports that should be addressed.
Right.
As they're approving these events, you know, I think that the two most obvious to me are, is the integrity of the event adequately regulated by who's ever putting the event on? And that's almost on an individual case-by-case basis.
Sure.
And the second is I do have concerns that we probably shouldn't be encouraging wagering on those type of esports where a significant number of the competitors are minors.
Right. Yes. Although, you know, we still see wagering on the ice skating in the Olympics, and they're still.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have to take a you know, kind of a reasonable perspective on it, right?
Sure.
And it's not just, and I don't think that we should, you know, ban all esports because there may be a minor involved.
Right.
But, you know, I think we have to take a look at it on a case-by-case basis, and you know, I just think it's a bad look if we're wagering on something where a 15- or 14-year-old
sure
ultimately is.
No question.
Again.
So one of the things that has helped the New Jersey gaming industry has been that they've been able to continue to accept bets on their online casinos, which includes, you know, sports books as well as online casinos, which Nevada doesn't offer. Do you think that they're going to revisit that fairly quickly once this is over? Nevada might become an online casino state?
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, people forget that Nevada has for many years had the statutory authority to authorize online casinos.
Right.
They just have chosen at the regulatory level not to do that. I think Nevada has some advantages and some disadvantages in that arena. You know, the biggest disadvantage is that we're a small state. And
right.
The number of, everybody's doing it right now on an intrastate basis. In other words, it can only take patrons who are physically located within their state. So New Jersey is a much bigger state, so they have a much bigger opportunity to realize, you know, real revenues from the online gaming. So
right.
that's one of the disadvantages Nevada has.
Right.
The advantages is, you know, we've already put into place and are regulating online poker. And so it's not a difficult transaction,
right?
A transition from poker to full casino wagering. So I think there's advantages to disadvantages to Nevada, and I think a lot of it is going to come down to, you know, who in the industry is willing to support online gaming and who isn't, and. You know, they have a variety of arguments with regard to whether it's worth it and whether or not it distracts from the main business of the state of Nevada, which are the
right. In terms of the small state, however, you know, Nevada does have a compact with New Jersey and Delaware to share poker players.
Yeah.
And I believe that could happen also with casino players. I know it can't happen with sports bettors, but it could certainly happen with regular bettors. So would that make a difference?
Well, it would make a difference, but there's a really legitimate reason why the states would want to share liquidity on poker, because the more liquidity you have, the more games you have, the more attractive it is for your in-state residents to participate. You know, with regard to casino wagering, you could come up with some complicated revenue share propositions for casinos, but, you know, I'm not so sure I'd be all that thrilled to open up, if I were New Jersey, to open up New Jersey for the onslaught of Nevada casinos.
Sure, sure. But there are a couple of companies that are, you know, located in Nevada and New Jersey, so they probably wouldn't mind that.
Oh yeah, I think there's I think there's a number of casinos that would welcome the expansion to online casinos.
Right.
And a lot of those are because they are multi-state operations.
Right. So we saw a few years ago, I think it was Las Vegas Sands that would hand out devices to the players, and they could play anywhere they wanted, you know, within the confines of the casino. And it didn't really work that well for them. But but now that you know, people don't want to sit smack dab next to somebody else, do you think that's a something that could come back, and maybe they could even do it on their personal devices?
Yeah, possibly. We, you know, we've had that in Nevada for a long time.
Sure.
We called it mobile wagering, but it was mobile wagering within the facility.
Right.
You know, it really didn't catch on.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if people come to Las Vegas in order to, you know, gamble on a personal device, right? But if you look at Macau, you know, one of the things that has taken off in Macau, in a significant way, is the live dealer terminal wagering.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what occurs in Macau is you have all these tables that are manned by a dealer. You're sitting at a terminal that looks like a slot machine, and you have the ability to wager on, you know, 30 or 40 different table games that are all being dealt with a live dealer, right?
Right.
You know, whether or not, you know, when the industry reopens, people will prefer to be in the casino environment but not at a table.
Right.
Playing with a live dealer. it could show some resurgency for that technology.
Sure. Right. So one of the concerns I think of the casino operators right now is really the business model. I mean, when you reduce the number of players, you know, at a blackjack table or a craps table to three or four, and you have to shut off every other slot machine. I mean, what does that do to their business model?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a really good question, and I wish I had the answer to it. I think that at first it's not going to have a significant impact because the demand is simply not going to be there.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to build it up from wherever we start at, whether it be 10 or 25%.
Sure.
As we start to get people coming back to Las Vegas, then I think it becomes a serious concern. And I think the casinos will figure out how to manage that.
Sure.
I have a lot less faith in how all the local restaurants are going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Their business models are pretty specific. Got to have a full number of tables every night, and they're going to have to reduce that by half or so. So that's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Tony, thanks for taking the time to join us. We appreciate your opinions and your feedback. You know, we all are really shooting in the dark here on what's going to happen at the end. But you have the expertise. I think your opinions are a little more valid than a lot of other people.
Well, I'm happy to share them. I'm not sure if they're any more valuable than anybody else's, but just how I see the potential for
Great.
The industry to come back.
Great. Well, thanks for the time. And let's get together after this is over, and we'll celebrate seeing each other face to face again.
I'll look forward to it, Roger.
Thanks, Tony.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino, sportsbook, or poker room can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. To learn more about the regulatory aspect of the lockdown, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on the gaming industry, including daily updates, subscribe for free at GGB News using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next week on the podcast. You put the load right on.